From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armia, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk related words or unrelated words. Sometimes it's hard to tell. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas. And joining me, of course, as they do each week, language experts and New York Times best-selling authors, and also two people who are very definitely related, Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Hey there, Kathy Petras. You are at your home. It's a darkened room there in Armia, Spain. A little mood lighting.
Yes, that's exactly what it is, mood lighting. Actually, it's a dark day. It's raining.
Oh.
It's raining in Spain, and not on the plane, but on the streets.
Ross Petras, hello. You are there in front of all your lovely books at your home in Toronto. Raining
yes.
in Toronto today, Ross?
No, it's a nice sunny day, actually.
It always is there in Toronto.
It's a wonderful... I actually really love the climate here, I have to say, but... A lot of people don't agree with me, so...
You know, people always talk about how it's annoying to ask people about the weather or just to talk about the weather when you don't have anything else to talk about. Obviously, we have other things to talk about, but I always find it kind of interesting. I mean,
I do too. Yeah, I agree with you. You know?
This is a pet peeve of mine. They always say never start a book, but the new rubric is you shouldn't start a book with the weather. I have no problem with that.
I love this book.
I got a little weary, but...
Well, you know, it's a shared experience. We all know what weather is. We all know what these things are. We are able to be put in... a place with someone else, I think it's fine.
With a real feel for it. Yeah. And also, like, if you guys, like, how are you doing? I don't want someone to go, like, well, my back hurts, and then I've got, like, a little... Whereas the weather, you can explain.
A lot of people do that, actually. You're sort of like, no, that's not what I meant. The answer is fine, you know?
Oh, you know what? That's funny that you say that, because in England, I guess instead of saying, like, how you doing, they say, you all right?
Ooh. Really?
Yeah, they ask like, you all right? And when I visited there a number of years back, that really confused me. And also, I was feeling a little under the weather.
Yeah.
And so somebody came up and they're like, you all right? And I was like, no, man, I'm really not
feeling
well.
Not really.
Yeah.
I realized by their face that they did not care. They weren't really asking me that.
Oh, exactly.
That can get a little touchy.
Well, we are jumping off today with a term that's certainly been in the news and will certainly be even more in the news in the near future. We're going to talk about tariffs.
Yes. If you'd like, I studied tariffs for years in school, but if you want to talk about that, but
I got a D in economics, so I don't think I'll contribute.
But this really got me because I mentioned it to Kathy. I know Arabic, and I didn't know the origin of tariff. And I'm going to ask you, Fletcher, what language does tariff come from? And I just gave it away.
Huh. Yeah. It really does sound like it comes from Arabic, probably.
Wow!
Did I get it?
And I didn't know this. It comes from the Arabic root word, which is arafa, which means to know. And like, you know, you might go all the time, you would go like, Dadif, do you know this or that? And then the verbal noun. And then the next episode, I think we'll be talking about gerunds and participles. But in this case, it's called a verbal noun. And it's tarif. It is known. In effect, you know what you need to pay. And that's where it came.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that cool?
That is really cool.
I thought that was really something, I must say.
And here's the really cool part. I'm sorry, Kathy, to interrupt you here, but here was the really cool part. There are a number of words that all came from the Arabic from trade, when the Arabs were trading in medieval times with the Europeans.
Mm.
And there was one word that, annoyingly, Kathy instantly knew. Kathy, why don't you share that word with us, which came from the Arabic?
Okay, the word is tabby. T-A-B-B-Y.
Like the cat?
Yes, exactly. Like the cat. You look puzzled, Fletcher. And Ross said, well, that's, what did tabby come from? And I said, well, isn't it striped fabric?
Yep. She
and
did.
It is.
And she, I mean, she knew it instantly because I thought, like, wow, wait till we tell Fletcher this one. No one knows this. And Kath knew it, like, you know, immediately.
Of course.
But as long as it's not Latin, I'm good.
But it does come from striped fabric, which actually was made in a part of Baghdad in medieval times, and the part in Baghdad was called Atabiya, apparently named after a prince, Atab of the Umayyad dynasty. And then they traded that with the Europeans. The Europeans called it tabby, as Kathy said, striped, and then tabby cats are striped.
And that happened in the 1600s, the tabby cat part. And it's so funny because I don't think anyone thinks of tabby other than a cat. Do you ever say something's tabby?
No. A tabby is, that's only a cat. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I've got a question for you, Fletcher, because Kathy and I both know this usage of tabby because we're big, really big Agatha Christie readers.
Oh, sure.
And she uses, Kathy, want to explain it to Fletcher? Oh, no, let's see, if Agatha Christie uses tabby in a different way, particularly in Miss Marple, do you know what that would be, that usage of tabby and what it would mean?
No, definitely not.
Okay, they refer to Miss Marple. You know Miss Marple is the
sure.
elderly,
uh-huh.
yeah.
Yeah.
Who's actually, she's probably only in the 60s or something. I hate to say
that. Don't say
time
like
changes.
That.
But they use tabby to mean an old maid, like a older woman, usually unmarried at this point, whether it's widowed or a spinster.
Hmm.
And you call them like little tabbies. From the cat, though, I'm assuming.
Yeah, that's what I would think, yeah.
Yeah, because it's like, you're just sort of sitting there being like, fuzzy.
Yeah, you're,
as old women are, yeah.
As I often am, actually, come to think of it. Uh-oh.
Well, it makes sense. And just these words coming from Arabic and the trade, because, mm-hmm. Europeans go and they might not speak Arabic, but they hear these words over and over, a word that at least sounds like tariff or tabby. Because these are the words involved in the trading. Yeah, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'll buy 5 bushels of tabby, whatever you call it. Not bushels, but also we had other words which was interesting. Garble, jar, and average were also from the Arabic, which was interesting.
Oh, wow.
Garble gets me, because they say that's part of the commercial jargon. What would garble have come from, Ross? Do you know?
Garble, to sift.
To sift.
Yeah.
But why would to sift end up being like mixed up?
Because you're looking at kind of when you're shaking spices, apparently you're sifting them, but you're mixing them up in a sense. You're kind of going this, like they apparently from spices and you're like shaking it on a sieve and it's mixed up.
I mean, I could see that sort of changing through time to mean all, mixed up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could see that.
Yeah. And jar, I just looked up. Jar came from jar.
Yeah,
which was a jar. So yeah. That's pretty nice and even.
Yeah.
So now the key is these words are all related.
Mm-hmm.
Now.
Are they not?
What a brilliant segue, Kathy.
And it was deft. I thought it was like it was a hidden segue, Ross. So now the main topic of today's show, related or not.
Seems appropriate coming from the two of you being related.
We are related. We're going to give you two words that might or might not be related. They might or might not be siblings, if you will, like Ross and me, from the same root, which would be our parents in this case. Okay. The two words are emoji and emoticon, related or not.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Two things. One, it sounds like all of these are going to be 50-50 questions, and I'm terrible at 50-50 questions, shockingly. You'd think you'd get half of them right? I don't. Secondly...
We'll keep score.
Secondly, this seems obviously related, which means you're probably going to tell me somehow it's not. So emoji is probably like a Japanese term or something, and emoticon is like just a term for, an emotionally charged icon.
Wow.
That is real good, Fletcher.
How much of that did I get right?
All of it.
Really? I just made it up.
100%.
I've never thought about it before in my life. I just made it up right now. This is cool. Let's go.
Emoji actually comes from the Japanese, and the E part, is picture.
Oh.
And the emoji is character.
Okay.
Like, as in, like, we have kanji, when they're a certain type of Japanese writing, the G part is the character part. So it's basically a picture character, which makes complete sense.
Yeah.
The emoticon is sort of like a, when was it invented? In, I had it here somewhere, but basically.
It's 1992. Emoticon came before emoji.
I always heard emoticon before emoji, far
yeah,
before that.
Yeah, as did I, mm-hmm. Yeah. But not by much. I mean, emoji started in 1999, but it really became big starting in 2008 because of iPhones.
Yeah.
Having emojis right. on them.
You know, it's funny, Kath, though. I have here, I just looked it up here, and they're saying it was 1982. It doesn't make any difference. I'm just kind of...
Yeah, but the was term, it called the
term,
an emoticon?
Yeah, the term or the... Or, yeah, exactly.
Yes.
I kind of liked emoticons better than emojis because they were sort of fun to have to type.
I like emoticons better, too. I agree with you. Emojis yeah. are a little bit too... I don't know. I'm not wild about them either.
I've gotten to where I use both. You know, way too much. Maybe not as much
do
as
you.
Some people. I mean, I don't flood you with emojis, but yeah, I use them probably in more than half of my texts at this point.
Do you? Oh, yeah. My. Oh, my. And you're yeah. a word person.
I know.
Fletcher,
I know.
Let's get off this show right now.
Well, so this, I mean, emoticons, let's leave aside the word, I guess, for a second, even though we are a word show. Do we have, like, the earliest instance of an emoticon being used? I mean, is it really 1982? Doesn't it seem like something like Lawrence Stern would have thought up or something?
I see it right here from an actual literal text, a picture of the text. 9 September 82 at 11:44. From Scott Fahlman, Fahlman at CMU 20C. I propose the following character sequence for joke markers. Colon, and then he has colon, you know, dash, and
smiley. Parentheses, sorry.
Yeah, I know. And he has, quote, read it sideways. Actually, it is probably more economical to mark things that are not jokes, given current trends. For this, use, and then he has the other, you know, the other...
Parentheses.
Yes, backwards.
Parenthesis.
Yes, and then within a few months, the smiley had spread to ARPANET... and Usenet, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating.
Usenet, holy cow.
I know, isn't
that
old?
Years.
But people were also talking about using other things. Like they had the one other idea was an ampersand, you know, with that mm-hmm. eight sort of and thing.
Sure.
And that was supposed to be someone doubled over in laughter.
Oh.
Oh, wait a second. I just found a smiley face. As in an emoticon, as in colon parenthesis, from in 1648.
See, there you go. There you go.
Wow, Kathy, that's good, Fletcher. You're really good on this now.
It was in a poem by Robert Herrick, who I studied in college.
Oh, wow.
And it said, tumble me down and I will sit upon my ruins, smiling yet.
Wow.
Colon parentheses.
That is cool. Okay, now we're going to... This is an interesting one, Fletcher. There's a little bonus question involved in this, too, which gives you a choice of three. So we can go to the 50-50, and then we're going to go to the 33-33-33, okay? Ready?
Okay.
The first question is this. Miniature minus, siblings or not, related or not?
Miniature and minus. No, I don't think so.
Very good. Now we have your big extra credit bonus question.
Uh-huh.
Miniature's original meaning comes from another word meaning something red, something worked by hand, Latin manus, the A changed to an I, or a mining-related word.
Oof. I don't know why in the world you would offer me something red, so I'm going to go with that one.
Fletcher!
Bad, Ross! Bad, bad, bad! We should have, like, done everything sounded ridiculous.
I know, we really should have. That was a shame.
With the foot, you know,
that
our
was
teeth.
A shame, yeah. I agree with you.
But obviously I have no idea why that would be the case. Can you tell me?
Well, it's really interesting because I think the obvious, I mean, I think you, I'm not trying to disparage your you know, lexicography or your lexicographical knowledge, but miniature and minus, I would think automatically you would think if you weren't being quizzed, they're probably related. At least I would have, wouldn't you? Or
I don't know.
Minor and miniature, minus miniature. Okay, Fletcher, I don't like you at all now. I'm leaving.
He's not related to us, Ross.
No, he's not a silly. No, but interestingly enough, miniature obviously it comes from manuscript illumination. Little, and if you recall, in the medieval times, they made little tiny pictures in books.
Uh-huh.
And it comes from the art of doing that. And that comes from the Italian miniatura, which comes from the participle, we were going to talk about that next week, miniare in Latin, to illuminate a manuscript, which goes backwards to another word meaning to paint red. And if you ever looked at these manuscripts, a lot of them have red in them. If they'll do like rubrications, it's called. They'll do red lines in the book.
Oh, wow.
And that comes from a word, minium, meaning red lead, which they used to use.
That's one of those ones that you would never, I mean, that's not so not too intuitive.
Mm-hmm. Yes. No, it
is. It really is just not at all.
But they would mine a certain type of lead, in mostly in Spain, and they would use that to make lead ink, which was red. Hmm. And from there, because those little paintings were so small, it became miniature, which was little.
Yeah.
Which is really an interesting way to do it.
That is fascinating.
Whereas minus is totally, totally different root. Totally came from the Latin minus, like, hey, meaning less. So are we being naive as native speakers of English?
Okay, naive and native. Never would I have thought that those two were related. So I will give you two answers. One is that I never really would have thought that they were related, which means probably it's the opposite, so they somehow are related. That would be that would be the answer I'm officially giving you for my point total. But in all honesty, I wouldn't have thought that those two words were related.
Well, as usual, Fletcher, you got it right.
Yeah.
And as usual, you got it by simple, very brutal logic.
Yeah.
You're completely correct. They both come from the Latin root word natuus. Or nativus, I guess you would look at it. I mean, if you're spelling it out,
uh-huh.
Which means natural or innate. It's sort of weird because as siblings, they split. Native became to mean, you know, what we know as native. And then that was one meaning. And then without the T, it came to mean something else, unsophisticated. But they originally had kind of both meanings together. And then they split apart in French and English. Okay, now, Fletcher, this is an interesting one. We have two words here, and are they related or not? Inch and ounce.
Inch and ounce. Inch and ounce. Let's see. My gut, right when you said both of them, my gut said yes. Yes, they are related, inch and ounce.
You said that you weren't good at 50-50s.
I continue to argue that I'm not, but in this case, I just got a tiny little twinge right when you said it, so I went with my gut.
Yes.
They really are.
They are related. They both come from the Latin.
I'm so sick of hearing the Latin.
Can we have some sort of emoticon for that? Like a verbal emoticon? Like I go like the whole. Is that uncia?
Yes.
Or unkia?
It would be in Latin, it would have been uncia. Yeah.
Okay.
I deep down think I'm reincarnated. It's like me and what's his face were like that. Marcus Aurelius.
Yeah, that's the one.
Meaning the 12th part. So
really?
When the Romans were in Britain, uncia became in the Old English as ince or unce, becoming inch. And then ounce came to us not from the Brits, but from the French.
Hmm. But 12 ounces isn't necessarily anything particularly interesting. Like, why?
It was a weight unit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sort of curious about that, too, because it's 16 ounces in a pound. So I'm wondering if a long time ago it was 12 ounces.
It was, yeah. It was a 12th part of a pound.
Oh, okay.
An ounce. Yeah.
Do you want to know something really weird?
Of course.
I looked it up. I was sort of curious with the why is like 12th so big?
Yeah.
And they're not really sure. But one thing is apparently the Sumerians, ancient Sumerians, and counted by 12s, and it possibly migrated from there to the Greeks and then to the Romans and then from there on. And do you know what they did? It's a weird way of counting. What they said was they would count like on the finger. The finger has three joints. Without get rid of the thumb.
Yeah.
And they would count like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
It's like your hands an abacus. I actually really like that.
Isn't that cool?
That makes so much sense.
I love that.
I know.
Because I'm never good at counting. I know this sounds ridiculous at my age, but I don't count well. I love it. Yeah, because I'm just looking up ounce right now. They're saying the 12th part of a pound.
In the Troy system of weights, yes.
Yeah.
In the Troy system of weights.
I'm sorry, but I see, but 1/16 and avoirdupois. Yeah. I always thought avoirdupois was your butt.
No.
What? I always thought if you're fat, they talk about your avoir.
No, because it was sort of alliterative. They're talking about in that sense, you know.
Oh, okay. Oh, I live in my own happy world.
Never mind.
But
I just look up at dictionary.com. Humorous, weight, heaviness. She was putting on the avoirdupois at like nobody's business.
That's what I thought. Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, it was humorous. It's not. You don't go to the doctor and go, I have an avoirdupois problem. You just, you know.
I don't see why not.
I want to say, though, if what you've got around you is your hands, then this is such an intuitive way to count, whereas it seems so strange to me before you told me it was based on those three joints in each finger. Now it seems it seems insane that you would count by tens.
Although,
it just seems really rational.
Actually, the tens make sense, though.
Well, I guess you have 10 fingers, right? Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, you get more for your money.
That's right. You can do 24 of them with just a thing, and then you got two thumbs left over.
But it really is interesting because I can see myself going, like, you're talking and you're kind of counting the, you know, weight of, you know, dates or whatever with your fingers. It's a really good system.
Wow.
Anyway, moving on away from Sumeria.
Oh, this is a fun one.
Island and isle.
Okay, now this one, okay, I think I remember, I think we've talked about this at some point.
Maybe a long time ago. We did.
And I think they must not be related. It seems so obvious, though, that they are related. Look, again, I will say that it seems so obvious that they would be related. So the only reason I'm saying they're not is because I think we've talked about it before.
Well, I don't like this way of thinking, Fletcher. Look, I find it offensive, frankly.
This is still a game, right? I'm here to win.
Not when you're playing it against me.
I'm also trying to be transparent and saying that it would seem so obvious that they were related, which is probably what I would say in normal circumstances.
You're absolutely right.
How are they not? This seems nuts.
Well, it's sort of weird because island comes from an old English word, eagland, and island comes from the Proto-Germanic thing in the water. And it's related in a weird way to aqua, which we do know is water, aquatic, etc. And they're not quite sure how it whizzed into English, but it became basically eagland, and then people started seeing isle later on, and they shoved in the island isle part instead of the eag part. So it became island.
Yeah.
Okay, isle, they're not really sure where it comes from. There's one thought that it comes from the word salo, which means salty, as in island in the salty sea, related to solemn, which is open sea, but no one's really sure. So anyway, what happened, though, is it was basically written I-L-E, which makes sense.
Sure.
Then what happened was, because in Latin, island is insula, it has an S. And in the 1500s, all these guys said, gee, Latin is the prestige language. Let's shove an S in the word. So they did.
Yeah, that won't cause any problems at all.
No, not at all. No problem hearing the word isle and you spell it I-S-L-E. Of course, why not?
So in the middle of Ross's wonderful explanation there about isle and island, we lost Kathy entirely. So Ross and I will take this one home. Ross, give me one more here.
Yes, I will. First of all, I want to get Kathy a little bit chastised. She said, guys,
You can do that now because she's not on here,
she can't go back. She said, I lost the connection. She forgot the C in connection because she was so nervous.
Kathy,
we have to get her
Kathy,
on spelling.
Kathy.
Yes. And she can't say a thing.
That's right.
Actually, we're going to do two really quick ones, Fletcher. Okay. We were both really happy with these. And we're going to do them fast. House and penthouse.
Oh, I absolutely would have assumed that they were related because I would assume that a penthouse is just a certain kind of house.
Yep, and they're not related at all.
That's
which was
bizarre.
Fascinating.
How's
this
that?
Was the this one I had no idea about. Now I'm going to give you another quick little mini quiz here. The house and penthouse is related to what part of your body?
Oh my goodness. House. No, I don't know. Head. Your head.
Just no, it's, appendix.
Just
because
it's up high. Your appendix?
Yes.
House. What?
It comes from the medieval Latin appendicium, from appendere, to hang, as an appendix. And it became an appendage to the building, is the house part.
Wow.
Isn't that weird?
That's crazy.
And then it was attached to another thing, so it became basically, the word became pentes, as an appendix. Then it became shortened, I mean, it was shortened from Old French appendis, then pentes, then penthouse. Nothing to do with house.
Oh, that's bizarre.
And I always sort of thought, like, the pent part, like, kind of meant, like, high up house or
something.
Yeah,
sure, of course,
you know?
Right? Yeah.
Nothing related.
Oh, that's unreal.
And now another quickie, interesting one. You're going to probably guess, I mean, you're using your brutal logic, you're going to know immediately. Okay, fish and crayfish.
Fish and crayfish. You know what? We talked, this is fun, because a week or two ago, we talked about fish and all the things that are called fish that aren't fish.
Yes.
These must not be related, again, just using the logic that I have been. But of course, I would have assumed they were.
Yes.
A crayfish.
Exactly.
Yeah. So where's this from?
This is a really weird one. I'm going to give you another minor clue. It's sort of like you might say a geological sort of thing it's related to. Another word in French and then from there into English.
No, not getting there.
Crevice.
Crevice.
And then it became into French, crevice, excrevice. And then the vis part kind of sounds like fish.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with fish.
Well, so is it because they're like little things that can get into crevices?
I think. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's just what I read. I have no idea. They're not talking about that. One other minor question I have for you. Do you call crayfish crayfish or do you call them something else?
I call them crawdads.
Yeah, that's it. More common in the Midwest and the South. Because my wife is from the West, too. And she said, you know, and then there's another word, which I'm going to go down to this deep South that my relatives said in the South. Now, this is more boring. It's crawfish.
Oh, crawfish. Sure, I've heard
crawfish. Which I've heard, too. But yeah. I always said crayfish. I never said, and crawdaddy, I've heard, too. Mm-hmm. But that's like an
old guy who, you know,
yeah,
sits
exactly
on the porch or something.
I don't like them crawdaddies.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I know, exactly.
What happened? Oh, man. By mistake, I closed.
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petrus records from her home in Armia, Spain. Ross Petrus from his home in Toronto, Ontario, in Canada. Torrin Anderson composed our theme music, and our digital team is Beth Golay, Kate Hutchins, and Carly Cooper. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic, or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org or email them at krpetrus@gmail.com. You can also email us a voice memo of you asking it your question. You might get your voice heard on air. If you'd like to do the same thing by downloading the KMUW app, you can do that and just click the Talk to Us button. You can find all of Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
No matter what happens in Washington, the NPR Politics Podcast is here for you. For the latest news, insights, and analysis from the election and beyond, listen to the NPR Politics Podcast.